Welcome to Cabronas y Chingonas, a podcast where we talk about queer and Latinx topics such as
Christy Thomas on the new Babysitters Club, and honestly the old Babysitters Club, low-key. She was that tomboy representation for white girls everywhere, and she's killing the game. She's still on her men are trash bullshit even now, you know. But I'm stoked on the tomboy representation for now. We'll see where it goes in the future, you know.
For us light skins, yeah, let's see where it goes. I'm sure they're gonna make a second season.
Yeah, I don't see that being canceled. Anyways, queer legend Christy Thomas out.
What's poppin', Chingona? Was good.
Probably this red curry that I'm gonna have after we're done recording today. I found like a vegan spot, so I got some soy chicken in there. So I'm
soy isn't bad. I'm not against soy. Like, it just depends on how it's like seasoned, and that's my problem. Like, we were talking about this before. I was like, You're living the meatless life, but like there's like so many veggies that I can't eat, like,
oh, right.
they make me feel really sick. So I have no option but to like, I stick to like chicken and like turkey, but like, yeah, I'm allergic to like half vegetables that exist.
Damn.
So yeah,
that's right. So, I forgot.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't be vegan. Like, I've like,
some people can. Some people, if they have too much soy, like, it messes with them, you know.
Yeah. So soy actually makes me sick too. So I've had it before because I've tried like the epalote in Pleasant Grove.
Right.
It's like a vegan Mexican restaurant.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go there.
It's good, dude. It tastes really good. It just, obviously, because I have so many like things I can't eat, that's on my list. I got pretty sick pretty fast, so it was I could never go back again. But it was a no-no for me. But you know, shout out to learning to eat food that's good for your body versus like, I don't know, I've always had like weird food stuff my whole life, but now I have to actually eat food that's like regimented, and if I don't, you know, I get sick to my bones. So yay. Fun.
Awesome.
Yay. So guys, make sure, guys, gals, queers, all y'all, make sure to eat food that's right for your body, and fuck people for telling you if you're eating too much or too little of something. Tell them to go fuck themselves. Eat whatever feels good for your body, period.
Yes, exactly. Fuck a fatphobic doctor. I just got like, right? Ramped up again about fat phobia like 2 seconds before we started like recording.
Dude, me too. Yeah, dude, I was just thinking about it because I was like, damn, every time I've gone to the doctor, they always ask me like, do you work out? And I'm like, yes, I fucking work out all the time. And they look at me like, they're like, nah, I don't see it, bitch. And I'm like, dude, look in my chart. I have like food like deficiencies. There's lots of foods I can't eat, and the foods I can are carbs. They don't make me as sick. So I got to thinking about it today just because I was like, oh man, like, if you go to the doctor and you're fat, it's because you're fat. If you go to the doctor when you're skinny, they think you're absolutely healthy. But the truth was that I was like totally super not healthy for reasons that are just insane. And like, they really thought, like, I'm pretty sure I had an eating disorder and I was on drugs and shit, but they thought I was healthy because I was skinny.
They're like, oh, you're
BMI. That's just not how
though.
That shit works. Right? Oh, my BMI was like crazy. Like, I had like I had almost 0% body fat. Like, but was I healthy? I was going through the most depressed stage of my fucking life, and I was totally super unhealthy. Like, I was barely eating. So now that I'm fat and I actually like who I am, and I'm not depressed in that way, at least, like, what the fuck? Like, you can't win out here, dude.
Yo.
Being fat just is like, ugh, you're invisible, dude.
Yeah. It's nice to, like, now, I guess, I don't know, maybe it's because I haven't just, like, gone outside because quarantine, but it's kind of been interesting how my body image issues have kind of like really gone down since that. And I, you know, you've been in my room. One wall of my room is just mirror.
Ooh.
It's just a whole mirror.
Okay, Leo.
Not on purpose, but No, like, no, yeah, there's no avoiding looking at myself, you know. And I've just kind of been like, okay, like, I don't hate any of this. Like, is it like outside sources that make me hate this, you know? Like, it just made me think, because I was totally feeling myself yesterday. So yeah, you guys are welcome for the 1,000 pictures that I posted on Instagram story. That was like the most pictures I've taken in like all of 2020. So yeah,
I mean, fuck it, keep it up. Like, dude, like, I'm not punishing myself because I've gained weight. Like, only thing is that, like, working out does help when you're, like, depressed. Like, just moving your body does something to the rest of your endorphins. Like, that's it. Like, sometimes you just need to work out, like, 30 minutes. You don't need to overexert yourself either, because I know some people that are just, like, you know, trying to work their whole fucking fat off, and it's like, doesn't work that way, and you shouldn't be working out for those reasons. And fuck it, take like 20 selfies, like, who cares? Like, that shit's great. Like, you have to do it. You have to be like, I'm a human selfie.
I tried a little bit of yoga recently, like barely, just a little bit, you know, because like my stress was like wild, and it was like manifesting in my shoulders, and when I would relax my shoulders, it was really painful. And that's not, like, that's the opposite.
That's not normal.
Opposite of what it should be. So I've been, like, doing a bunch of beginner ones. And, yeah, like, it feels nice. I don't know. I told you about this before already.
Yeah. No, I mean, and I think that's interesting, because you went from being, like, a boxer to, like, you know, kind of going to the other side of, like, oh, wait, like, yeah, namaste. But, I mean, I think both of those things can exist within a person. Like, you can both want to, like, hit the shit out of something and also, like, breathe calmly and deeply and center yourself in your body, which boxing and yoga kind of both do for you. But as far as like intensity levels, one, you have to kind of get worked up, the other one is the opposite, right? Like, so
yeah,
I think it's totally necessary to just to breathe,
duality,
you know?
Like meditation. Whatever like feels right for you, you know.
Yes.
So what have you been watching?
As you started the show, I actually have just gotten into Babysitter's Club, and it's kind of like this great escape. Like, do you feel like, I mean, I know you've been watching it as well. I watched it because you tweeted about it, because you have that power. You tweet about a show that I don't want to watch, that
it's
I'm not even
I make
thinking
a whole
about,
fucking show
like,
of it. Like,
okay.
I can't just say like, oh, I like this show. I have to make a whole statement about it. I don't know what's wrong with me.
I mean, no, there's nothing wrong with you. That's why we have this podcast. I want to hear your statements, right? So it's like, if you say something, I'm like, oh, well, look, fuck it. Let me watch it. So
I'll leave my Babysitter's Club commentary for later, because we're going to talk about it. But I will say, you just reminded me about that tweet, which is about how a show like Babysitter's Club exists on Netflix and is a Netflix original, as well as Fuller House, which is like the opposite.
Oh, God.
Like, yeah, opposite side, right? Like, opposite everything. Like, there's an episode of Fuller House where they are literally talking about basically saying make America great again. Like, not, like, shamelessly. Like, shamelessly Trump shit. And it's supposed to be this, like, family-friendly thing. And they have, like, awful representation for Latinos. I mean, I haven't seen it in a long time, but from what I remember, it was absolutely awful. Like, this is not the 1930s. You can't put stereotypical Latinos in this like this. Like, we're not even close to like that. We're not even close to like what they represent Latinos to be. So it's just crazy to me that Fuller House is just season after season after season, and then they're like, oh, also, here's the most beautiful middle grade show you can think of, Babysitter's Club. It's nuts. So I wonder when, I don't know, more networks, when more big conglomerates like that are going to just really catch up and stop doing this bullshit, you know?
Yeah, I mean, Fuller House, they can burn that to the ground. I didn't know it was that bad. But I mean, I don't trust white people in 2020. So, I mean, I never planned on watching that one. But Babysitter's Club, I feel like white people really, I thought it was cute that they had that little joke about Clueless in episode one with Alicia Silverstone. I thought that was adorable. Mm-hmm. Like, she straight up said her mom was clueless. Oh, my bad. We'll get into that later, I guess. But I've also been watching I May Destroy You.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's some good shit.
God damn.
Michaela Cole.
Okay, but like,
that was amazing.
Let's talk about her. But like, just a little quick trigger warning for people dealing with like sexual assault. Like, don't watch this shit.
Unless you're like
if you're
in
not
that place.
Like,
yeah,
ready.
It just, it's,
Unless you're ready. Because
some people are like me and they like the cathartic. It's like, yes, I'm going through a horrible thing. Let me watch it too, you know? Like those people that put on really sad music when they're sad.
Oh, yeah. Let me heighten this feeling, right? Yeah, I mean, if you haven't processed your stuff,
it's up to you. Just, you know, take a warning.
It's up to you. Yeah, just don't do it. But I mean, it's really good. I think she's a genius, and now I know why chewing gum is not on Netflix.
Mm. Yeah, I read a little bit about some of that drama about CAA being a bitch.
Yeah,
creative artist agency. Fuck you guys. But also, if you want to hire me or like get me like reps with me, not fuck you guys.
I take it back if you hire me.
They can start.
Reparations start with you. No, they don't. Pay Michaela Cole. Yeah, so apparently they were trying to screw over and not give her, like, I think, ownership of her own creative shit. So I think that's a huge problem.
The same way that they did.
Yeah.
Like a bunch of other people, basically.
Yeah, basically everyone else, right? Like, but she said, fuck that. I'm keeping it. It's mine. It belongs to me. But yeah, so shout out to Michaela Cole. I fucking love her. And it's a departure from chewing gum. It's nothing like chewing gum. I went in thinking it was going to be a comedy, and it is not. But it's an incredible, incredible narrative. And I don't, you know, I still don't know where she's completely going all the time. But I don't care. I'm going to follow her. It's very queer. It's very gay. It's very black. And I love all those things. So cool. You know, this is a completely new perspective we're getting. And I love that. So more. Just give us more things and I'll watch all of it.
Yeah, a lot of people are comparing it to Fleabag, which I don't really agree with.
No.
I thought that was an odd comparison. Like, I guess I understand where they're coming from, where they're like saying, oh, the creator and their main writer is also the star of it, and they're both very talented women, but that's the extent of it. And I guess they're British. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, that's like trying to compare Issa Rae to, like, I don't know,
Lena Waithe.
What's that bitch's? No, not Lena Waithe, Lena Dunham. Oh. It's like trying to compare them two, and they're like totally.
I wouldn't go
lanes,
that far, like, because like that's, you know, one of them is completely trash and the other one is completely amazing. It's more like just apples and oranges. It's just different shit.
Yeah. Yeah, different, completely different things. That's what I'm saying. Like, Lena, completely different thing. Or even comparing Lena Waithe to comparing, you know, Issa Rae. You just don't do that. They're in different
ways. Yeah, it's just
still.
Like, there's just no need for it.
Mm-hmm. Two incredible creatives making very, very separate art. So, I mean, you know, shout out to all of them except Lena Dunham, who, whatever.
Yeah, fuck Lena
Gave
Dunham.
Her more space than I wanted to. Yeah, don't need to speak about her. But anyways, what else? Oh, God. So, Hamilton came out. Oh, God. And I still haven't seen it. And I don't
want
to ever see it.
I don't like musicals. We've talked about this. Don't like musicals. Quit trying to convince me to watch this shit. I'm sorry.
I just can't. It's 2020. It's a bad year for Hamilton to be coming out. And not that there was a chance of me wanting to see it in the first place. Shout out to everybody that enjoys the music. Everyone's allowed to like what they want, and that's fine. I'm not hating on people enjoying themselves. I'm just not ever going to enjoy myself by watching Hamilton. That's just not for me. Or, you know, Lin-Manuel Miranda things aren't... They're not for me. And that's okay. That's not a problem. That's okay. But yeah, no thank you. You can keep that, sir. That's like High School Musical. It's not for me. You know, they can just keep it. So
likewise, I think that's all that we'll ever say about Hamilton ever again. Okay, thank you. The last thing I'll say is I watched this Irish comedy rom-com called Dating Amber, and it's very, very difficult to find online. Don't ask me how I did it. It was very difficult. If you live in the UK,
how did you do it, Maitha? If you snitch on yourself right now.
If you live in the UK, you can watch it on Amazon Prime. But if you somehow like, if you're feeling like something kind of lighthearted and super cute and super queer, then Dating Amber was really enjoyable. I liked it a lot. It's not one gay queer. It's two. You know.
Two queers. Two. Wow.
Anyways,
I'm impressed.
Yeah, that's it. I think we should probably get started on our topics of the day.
Yes. Okay, so we're going to be talking about very extremely different polar opposite things. I'm going to be talking about I'm No Longer Here. It's available on Netflix, kids. Anyone can watch it, and if you
surprisingly can't, an original, right?
Oh, yeah. It was beautiful. I was really shocked at everything that had to do, like, they partnered with Netflix. I get it. Everyone can watch it on Netflix, and I think that was a really smart decision for this film that it felt like a true indie. It felt like something I should be saying at, like,
right. It did. it felt very indie. It other than, like, the cinematography is not super indie, but it was, everything else.
Oh, that cinematography was, like, wow. Like, I didn't know.
So cinnamony.
So sweet. But let me get into it. Or do you want to discuss what you're going to be talking about today as well?
I'm going to talk about Babysitter's Club, which I think you guys probably already surmised. But I'm really excited to talk about I'm No Longer Here, because I watched it today for the first time, and it was so good.
Thank you. Right, you didn't hate. Good. No, I was hoping that you weren't gonna not like. I hope you liked it, and I hope you would watch it. So this is gonna be fun. We can both interact on this. Then I'm excited. Let's do it. Okay. So I'm No Longer Here also goes by the name Ya No Estoy Aquí. It was written, produced, and directed by Fernando Frias. His previous work, he's done Los Spookies. He's done. He's produced Taco Chronicles on Netflix. He's done some work here. He's not done a full feature like this. I wouldn't say he's done like a documentary style, some shorts. Not much on his IMDb, not even his picture, but shout out to him for working on, so far, two things I really enjoy: Taco Chronicles, which was amazing. if you ever saw it, it was great. And then Los Spookies. You can't go wrong.
Love me some Los Spookies.
I can't wait till season two. But anyways, nothing's happening for a while because I want everybody to be safe.
I know, I'm so fucking sad. I miss all these HBO summer shows.
Euphoria.
Yeah. I rewatched Euphoria recently, but that's besides the point.
Me too. Me Go too. On. I did same
so
thing.
So good. The soundtrack.
Amazing. Beautiful. Barbie Ferrer. Yeah. Stared at her the whole time. Anyways, so this movie is it stars Juan Daniel Garcia Trevino. He is Ulysses. He is the lead of his local dance crew in Monterrey called Los Tercos. And it's really, I think this film does something really interesting by, I think, almost making Monterrey also kind of like a character. You know, the places are just as important as the people because, you know, there's a lot of like melancholy, a lot of longing in this movie, and it's not necessarily for a person. It's for a place, place in time. It belongs to this group of people. So it's a lovely, lovely thing to see Monterrey, and like, cause I have family there. My grandma's buried in Monterrey. Like, it's very sacred to me. It's very personal. So when I get to see it, it makes me so happy and homesick for something that I don't quite understand, but I feel it. And I think that kind of is most of this film, is he is homesick for this idea of home that kind of no longer exists, right? And that's, I think, I don't speak for everybody, but I think it's a lot of people's experiences when they immigrate to the United States. They long for this Mexico that no longer exists, for this idea of it. And that's what Ulysses is going through in this whole movie. The film opens up with him getting in a car and leaving for Monterrey. And then all of a sudden it cuts and he's in New York City. And he is getting made fun of because he has a very special, kind of very unique look. It's kind of like a circa the epic cholo goth kind of look from, I think, like 2012, 2014. It was really popping in the EFE and all the big cities in Mexico. It's centered around dancing, you know, cumbia, really slow. And everyone Colombia. Has these... Colombia, yeah. But it's they call it Colombia, but it's just cumbia slow down. But that's what it's called. It's called Colombia, and all of them call themselves Colombios. I don't know, Colombianos? It wouldn't sound right to me. I didn't hear them.
They didn't refer words.
Yeah, no. They didn't refer to themselves that way. But anyways, he is the leader of this little dance group in Monterrey called Los Tercos, and it's really adorable. They all just kind of get together. They make they have a distinct look. They all have, like, this weird scene, emo slash, like, I don't know. I can't quite describe the look. How would you describe that look?
It's, like, really gelled down, and they have, like, I guess it, I think a lot of people thought that it was, like a emo or scene, like, ripoff back in the day, but it's not. Yeah, it's a whole separate thing, because they basically bring down the bangs, and, like, they have, like, a really, like,
you Goku know, like thing that, going in the back.
That artsy girl bangs, you know, where it's straight cut and it's gelled down, and then they have it also coming down like the side of their face. And yeah, they usually do like a very yellow bleach job on certain parts of it. This is mostly for the guys. But I thought it was, I was like, you know, this is okay. It's like a culture thing, you know?
Yeah, it kind of looked like all the haircuts that the chambelanes had in high school.
But with more gel somehow.
More gel, more bleach. And it's a beautiful look, honestly. I really, really enjoyed it because they really stuck to their aesthetic. It was very baggy pants, very baggy clothes for the boys. For the girls, it was like really, really tight clothes and like really, really tight shorts. And like tiny backpacks. It was beautiful to me. It centers around his little group, his little friendship that he has in Monterrey with all of them. They always get together, they dance, and what you're seeing throughout the movie is this incredible bond between all of them. They seem to always be together. They run around in a crew in Monterrey. And I mean, getting to see brown people who aren't rich. And they're actually brown, and they're actually Mexican, and they get to exist, and they get to be, at least for most of this movie, enjoying something together that it's not lethal. It's not, you know, the generic propaganda Mexico, you know, bullshit. None of them are in the cartel. They're not really, like, selling drugs. They're just, like, kids dancing, having fun. And it's really wholesome in this strange way. Like, not even strange. It's just wholesome. Yes, they probably smoke some weed and then you drink a little, but that's fine. To me, that's not like, that's normal. And Ulysses's role in this group is that he brings everyone together and he keeps everyone safe. There's even like a local gang that's offering to give them real drugs, hard drugs. And he's kindly said no, and he's kindly kept his people clean. He's kept his group away from drugs. They're showing how he is this big brother to them, and he's just trying to do the right thing. You know, and it gets really hard to do when you're in a developing country or just a country that's kind of war torn because of the cartel. So a lot of the movie is him flashing back to these memories of Mexico. And a lot of the film is him in present day New York City struggling because he is not going to assimilate his culture, his home. It was a forced immigration. It's not like he wanted to leave Monterrey. So by the time he gets to New York City, he's thrown into this world that he did not want to be a part of. He's getting thrown out of his home. He's basically homeless. He befriends Lynn, a local bodega owner's granddaughter, and they start to kind of form a friendship, but he's never quite made the effort, or not made the effort, but maybe he just doesn't want to assimilate. You know, he's got this dictionary, but he's not going to learn English, right? He's still stuck in the past. He does not want to move forward quite yet. And you kind of, as the audience, you don't kind of judge him for that. You kind of understand. You see that this was a forced thing, that he's here not by choice. He can't quite go back to the same Mexico. His mom has threatened him that he cannot go back. So he's kind of stuck. He's in limbo. And I don't know. What did you think about those New York scenes, Maitha?
In general, about like the forced migration that kind of happens, or more like, I guess, more like his life was threatened, right? So that he's kind of like, he in a normal fucking world, he would be able to claim, like, what do you call it whenever you like leave a
amnesty?
No, not amnesty,
it's the wrong word.
Yeah, it's like he basically should be able to like move like legally under like a visa for, because he's in danger and stuff. Yeah. But that's not the case, right? He has to like sneak out of the country, and he really doesn't want to. And I love that, just like you said, like, he, not everybody is like in the search of this alleged American dream that doesn't really exist. And he's not here to, he's like, when people are trying to like force English on him, he's like, I'm good, bro. And then, but I gotta say, I did love the relationship between him and Lynn, because they're both, you know, they're both like really young people. And she's so fascinated by him, which I thought was really interesting. And he was just kind of like, why are you, why do you give a fuck? Like, he's so confused by it all. But yeah, my favorite thing was just like the fact that he could give a fuck about being in New York, this place that all kinds of Americans are always going to under the search of who knows what. And he's just like, well, take me back to the mountains, the mountains in Monterrey, where I can dance with my friends. Like, cumbia is life, Colombia is life. Like,
yes,
I don't know. I really love that about it. I love that it never gave into that. And I like that it reminded me of like Tigers Are Not Afraid, and that he's very young. Like, you don't think so at first, but he's only 17, and he's like the leader and the carer for all these other kids. Just kind of like on Tigers Are Not Afraid, where like you kind of have to, because there's these, like, these situations aren't just like they, you know, a choice. His situation wasn't a choice. Like, the situation of the people in his group are not a choice. And honestly, the situation of the people who ended up hurting them are probably not a choice, right? Like, all this stuff has to do with, like, oppression and, like, poverty and all these things that are fucked. And I like that they still kind of got a slice of life out of it. And they never, even though, yeah, like, there was some violence in it, it was never, like, about the violence.
No. It was always about centering and humanizing poor people, poor brown people in Mexico, which is, you know, if you, the way that American media always presents maybe a character like Ulysses is that they demonize him. They'll, you know, oh, he's all of these ideas, all these stereotypes that white men made up for you know, the other. And that's what this movie does beautifully, is that it does not do that. It just allows you to see a human being, and it allows you to see someone, you know, you see poverty in a different way, right? Like, and because Mexico is a lot of things, but just because you're poor doesn't mean you're not happy, right? Like, just because you're poor doesn't mean that, you know, it humanizes a situation in Mexico, right? Like, people are poor, the cartel exists, gangs and drugs exist, all these things exist, but it doesn't take away from you being a good person. It doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, you can still find joy and happiness. And he did all of those things. And a lot of, you know, the situation in Mexico, like you said, it's a political thing. It's about power. It's about money. It's about violence. And it's just people, regular ass people, trying to survive and exist in that every day. And we never get that narrative. And it's never shot this fucking beautifully. And getting to see Monterrey like that, like from that lens, like, it was beautiful to me. And it was beautiful to see something so normal and so regular and so happy. And I mean, it doesn't exactly end that way. It ends realistically, because in Mexico, things, shit's popping off, right? Like, the way it is in the whole entire world, every single day, something oppressive and unjust is happening in the world. It's not new, you know, we're just being overexposed to it. And I think Mexico and Mexicans understand that more than anyone, is that shit's going to pop off every single day for the rest of our life. You know, you can find some joy in it, or you can wallow in that shit and let it break you. And at the end of this, there's this really, really polarizing scene where he goes back. And of course, nothing is the same. No one is the same. The cartel has came and taken over, you know, his part of town, his neighborhood. A new cartel has taken over. And he's just having to kind of come back to that, the thing he escaped. And so you can see the unrest in the regular people, the people that are just trying to exist, and then the police, and then the cartel, and he's come back to it all. And, you know, he's realizing that everything that he missed and everything that he loved is gone. And that's like, fuck, like, that's just too real. Like, when I talked to my mom about immigration and her idea of Mexico, she always tells me that it no longer exists. She's like, I could never go back to Mexico because that's not my Mexico. She's like, that's a different place now. That's not where I'm from anymore. And that just couldn't feel more real. And the whole process of him going back, which also was not a choice, I think that was like kind of polarizing for me to see, you know, because I don't think we've seen a movie that's humanized someone that's getting deported in that way. So what did you think about that whole deportation cycle at the end of it?
That one, I feel like I had like tuned out a little bit, so you're gonna it was interesting in I guess from more of a more general standpoint and less specific to the movie. It was interesting to see somebody going back, you know, because like I don't think he necessarily minded going back, right? Like that's kind of what he wanted all along, and that was interesting. There wasn't this fear of being deported in it.
Yeah, and he had a lot of privilege in that, for the fact that he was not scared to go back, even though he really didn't have anything to go back to. You know, his own mother told him not to, but his love...
This is low-key a tale of, like, homelessness, too.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought that that was kind of beautiful in the way that they make it, like, very, like, you know, like, people are always like, oh, I would never end up like that, or they probably have all these, like, preconceived notions about it, but it's just, like, sometimes shit just happens.
Yeah.
You know? You do what you can.
Yeah, and for them, for people to say, like, you know, why would they come over here? Or, you know, there's just so many, like, so much, like, brainwash BS propaganda that goes into the idea of immigration and people being here and where they're coming from. You know, he didn't necessarily leave a very bad place. It wasn't safe for him specifically, right? But it wasn't unsafe in general. It's just kind of regular. You know, that's just life. But he was privileged enough to go back and feel okay enough to go back, which a lot of people have literally even less to go back to, right? He had an idea. Some people don't even have an idea to go back to. So that's a blessing within itself. So, for this movie, it's saying a lot without having to hold your hand and take, like, you know, it didn't feel like, oh, here's the sappy violin music, here's
let
something,
let me spoon feed you guilt and it's just a story.
Yeah, it's just a story, and it was beautifully told and beautifully shot. And, you know, shout out to Fernando Frias, because that was amazing. And also shout out to Juan Daniel Garcia Trevino, who played Ulysses, because he's not an actor. He's just a musician. He learned to dance. He didn't know how to dance like this. He had to learn this, and he's very fucking good. I could never do that. He had to learn to dance.
He got the Megan Thee Stallion knees.
He does got the Megan Thee Stallion knees, Super Saiyan knees, okay? Like, amazing. And, it was his first acting role. He's not an actor. So he held the film with him just existing. He was such an interesting character, and we never get to see brown people that are actually brown and Mexican at the same time. That's incredible. That's insane. So for this movie, before I keep talking, I'm going to give it 5 pan dulces, because I thought it was great, and I've seen it like 3 times already. So I recommend you guys go see it on Netflix and watch it at least once.
Yeah, I loved it. I would say probably, like, no cafecitos. It was very real, like you said. So I'd give it a watch, no matter what.
Yeah, yeah. So good. So, so good.
It made U.S. Latinos look like little bitches, which I loved.
I mean, facts. Like, we are. We can't handle shit. I know I can't handle shit. Like, I can't ride a horse. Like, I can't do a lot of things, so.
I mean, I can ride a horse, but, like, I can't. Anyways. Yeah, so I guess let's talk about something completely different, but also very cool, and also a Netflix original, The Babysitter's Club.
Hey.
Which just came out, like, literally not even a week ago from whenever this comes out. So I have, like, the vaguest recollection of having read these books when I was young, but I think, like, you know, trauma has blocked so much of my youth from my brain. I don't remember... Damn. I do not remember specifics from the books at all. So when I was watching this, it was like a brand new thing. But Rachel Schuchert, I think is how you say her last name. She's the one who brought it back from the depths of our souls for Netflix last year. And luckily they finished up production prior to the Rona. So the little information that I got on this showrunner is that she's written for a few different shows that we like. She's never showrun before, though. This is her first go at it. But it looks like she's pretty good at what she does, so kudos. I hear it's harder to work with younger people, so, you know. But Yeah, girls and gays will be very happy to know that Alicia Silverstone is in this.
Yes!
Clueless fans can just rejoice if they decide to watch. She's the mother of Christy Thomas. She's a very who is a very type A, controlling, bossy, self-proclaimed leader of the Babysitter's Club. And her story is mainly revolving around her mom and her transition from being a divorced single mom to an engaged to a super rich white man lady. And I gotta say I did like the way that they brought in the topic of like wealth sort of casually for their family, because you can tell like they've had to, you know, they'd have to pay attention to their finances this entire time. And then and Christy's mom holds a sort of pride in that. It's not a bad thing. She doesn't want her kids to think that everything's going to be handed to them, and she wants her daughter to be self-sufficient and independent. And yeah, so I was kind of stoked on that shit and like the casual way that it was kind of brought up. And then also Christy, who we talked about at the beginning of the episode, is like a total tomboy vibe. So she couldn't give a shit about boys, and she would definitely, if she was older, be on Twitter saying like men are trash every other day. Like that would be the Twitter vibe for sure.
She'd be our friend.
She'd be cool. She'd be down. But yeah, that's what the first episode kind of centers on, is Christy and the forming of this club. And which, if you guys don't already fucking know, it's like the Babysitter's Club is a bunch of girls who are, they get together in a group and they start like a little business where people can call in and schedule whatever babysitter's available. You know what I mean? It's like Uber for babysitters, but it's on a landline. Anyways. The second episode is from the perspective of Claudia Kishi, who is a Japanese American artist who loves fashion. And to me, one of the best parts of like that storyline is Mimi, who is Claudia's grandmother, and she's the best. Like, they cook together and they'll talk about everything. And the grandmother is also very close to Claudia's older sister, who's like hella smart and like hella analytical, but she's also like not great at expressing her emotions. So she's kind of the polar opposite of Claudia. And through her, you kind of learn about Mimi's past, specifically her time in like a Japanese American internment camp.
I know. That's like incredible for a show to do, like for kids. I love it.
But yeah, I love that they bring it in. Like I said, once again, it's like a natural progression. It's a natural thing that comes about these people's stories. Another one of the Grillo members is Marianne. She's kind of like the shy one in this version of, and in this version of Babysitter's Club, she's biracial, which isn't how it was in the books, but she's black and white. And she learns how to speak up for herself. That's kind of her big thing. But like most shy people, she finds it easier to voice her concerns and stand up for herself or other people more. Like she helps other people, and that's where she is able to finally speak up. In this case, it's to speak up for a little girl that she babysits who gets misgendered. And after like this whole unfortunate situation kind of happens. But before that unfortunate situation happens, you're introduced to another favorite of mine, Dawn, who is like a Latina activist who just moved to Connecticut from California. And she's like every Californian stereotype in the book. She's a like full-blown activist. Like, she has like a green smoothie at school for lunch and sushi, you know? Like,
oh god.
She has all the knowledge that Tumblr has to offer.
Right on.
And she gives Marianne like the crash course on like the transgender community. And which I really love the way that they do it, because it's like a middle grade show for like that, you know, age group. And with Dawn, we're also introduced to like modern day brujos and brujas, and she brings in like protesting to summer camp. Like, she'll fight institutional injustice, and like,
yes!
she'll even like find like solutions that are free and stuff. And then like her storyline is that she gets shut down by the man still, which in this case is a woman. And they also kind of bring in very casually that her father is gay. And there's other openly queer characters, which I really liked, because it's never a thing. It's just like they are, and they're usually adults in this case.
How rare.
The final member is Claudia. She comes from New York City, and she has diabetes, so her storyline is kind of about that. And she's also, like, the boy crazy one. For obvious reasons that I've just stated, I don't have a lot to say about her storyline. But yeah, this isn't, like, the normal thing that I would usually cover on here. But it was, like, a very light and fun thing to watch, right? Like, it also brought in all these ideas about justice and queerness, and it didn't feel forced, and it felt really natural. And I was just really stoked that that kind of a thing exists for a younger audience, right? Like, even One Day at a Time is a little bit up there in terms of, like, things that they talk about. Like, yeah. I wouldn't want to show an 11 or a 10-year-old that per se, and at least not all of it. But this right here, you can, anybody can watch this. Like, they'll talk about menstruation, which should not be a taboo subject. Like, it's fucking fine.
Yeah. That so was adorable.
I really recommend this for, like, especially young girls, but shit, young boys, young non-binary kids, like, anybody. Like, this is a really important thing that's out there, very accessible and very, very kid-friendly and very important, you know?
Yeah, like, they managed to, like, fit all of this in there and make it digestible in a way that doesn't feel watered down, right? Like, it feels appropriate, you know? Like, they're actually children, playing children, and they're talking about things that are, you know, just, it's normal. It's bringing up trans people. Like, I think if a kid can figure a transness out or non-binary and figure out that shit pretty early on in life, you know, and I think 10-year-olds and 11-year-olds can handle that shit, too. Because there's, you know, people are really weird about censorship and censoring things for their kids. And I think it's highly inappropriate. I think kids are so much smarter than we give them credit for. And unlike Love, Victor, like, Babysitter's Club is actually, like, it feels appropriate for the actual age group they're speaking to, unlike other things, right? And and it's adorable, and the parents all seem great. Like, they're not perfect, right? But they're always, like, affirming their children's, like, ego, you know? Like, there's this, they apologize to their kids, they handle things in a healthy way. I think for me, because I'm getting older and I'm looking at different relationships now, I was looking at the parents and I was looking at the way they're handling situations. Of course, this is idealized because it's, you know, a children's show, but at the same time, I thought, like, wow, what a nice break, you know? You get to see adults being mature, being in control, and affirming their children's, like, best qualities. And I was like, wow, like, I wish, if I can't parent like that, then I'm not going to be a parent, right? But, like, that would be cool.
Yeah, it was definitely very idealistic, like you said. Yeah, so I mean, I would recommend it highly. I probably say no, Cafecitos. I didn't see any real glaring issues at all in this that I can think of. And I just hope that they push it forward with the Christie story. I mean, maybe with the Christie or the Dawn storyline. I don't know. Obviously, it would be cool for one of the actual characters to be queer. Like, that's not been explored before, you know?
Yeah, that would be interesting. I thought they were going to do that. I thought there was, like, a rumor they were going to do that at some point. But
I think people have always just gotten queer vibes from the Christie character because she's so, like, anti-boy. But, and I it was just, like, wishful thinking, which is not, like, it didn't happen or it's not going to happen. It's just, like, a matter of time, maybe.
Yeah, maybe, like, 3 seasons in or something. Like, maybe.
I think,
like,
they could do it 2 seasons in. I think they could done.
I mean, they could, honestly, because, come on, like, statistically speaking, how many of them are straight? One of them's bound to be gay, like, or queer, you know? Like, it just,
yeah,
ain't nobody, nah, that's not how that works. Math.
I know math. 4 out of 5. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. out of our friend group, right? Like, no. Well, shit, not even my friend group, but damn, okay. Ugh, I'm jealous. Yeah. But yeah, so that I loved it. I give it, I've only seen, like, 3 episodes, but for my 3-episode watch, I give it 5 panduzas. Like, show this to your children. Show this, I mean, adults. There's parts where you're going to zoom over because you're like, this is really kiddie stuff. But it's fine. It's really good. I really appreciated. Was it you that said that they actually have, like, personalities? Right? Like,
I don't think it was me that said that. But they do. They're all, like, you know, individuals and stuff.
I was really surprised at their acting. Like, it was actually pretty good. I was like, wow, like, I really believe these children right now. So 5 panduzas, like, it was really good.
Right on. And once again, it's on Netflix. But I think that's it for today because it's too hot to keep doing anything in Los Angeles.
So I got a crazy migraine too. So I did this on a migraine because I love all you guys, and also I'm poor, so that's
that dedication. So if you want to hear more from us because we're too tired to make more content, you can go on our Patreon. And we've got a couple of new Patreon supporters too, so thank you guys for joining. As you guys know, we post there every month, so check us out, patreon.com/COC podcast, and keep supporting mutual aid funds that are local to you. Keep talking about, you know, injustices happening, and, you know, arrest the cops that killed Breonna Taylor. And yeah,
keep having hard conversations with your racist, like, family members if you have them. Can't pick your family, you can totally pick your friends, and you can totally say fuck y'all to those people. But your family members, if you're down to do the work, do the work. It's worth it. Honestly, I do the work, you guys. It's something you have to do. So
you can drown their DMs with resources from Latinos Who Lunch highlights on Instagram, because that's what I did when my mom tried to come at me. What's good? Nobody's off limits. The all nobody's hands.
Sometimes you gotta get at your family. You gotta correct them, because sometimes, you know, it's out of love. You know, it's not no hate there. It's just, hey, mom, I gotta get you together. We gotta get you right.
Need to figure this out. Yeah, you need to really understand. Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, thanks for listening on another week. Go leave us a review on iTunes if you don't want to pay money for Patreon, which is understandable, especially right now.
Yeah.
We'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
Be safe. Bye.
Bye.